Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. As you know, I am the creative in The Creative Alchemist, and I always fly this journey with my co-host, Lori, who is going to be joining us in a few minutes. This will be just myself, and as always, we have a guest. And we always have these really exciting, very talented people who come on and have a level of expertise they can share with you. As you know, The Creative Alchemist is a talk show that really focuses on business. And some of you, many of you are entrepreneurs, and there are quite a few of you who also work in companies, and you may be executives, you may not. So this is the show where we address business needs from transferable skills, business planning, how to manage finances, all of these kinds of things. And we've even talked about your health and your physical and mental health, especially during COVID. I know we even once had a show about divorce, which we think may be an outcome once COVID is over. Many people are finding out how well their relationships work or don't work. So for this show, we have a very, very interesting guest. I spent some time in a conversation. I can only tell you this woman is brilliant, and she's worked in a job capacity that most people will never see. And when people joke and say, I can't tell you what I did or I'd have to kill you, she may not be joking. So there are some things that she cannot talk about. But I'm going to introduce her as Irene Barron. She is a well-known author, and she actually worked at the Pentagon, correct, Irene?
No, I didn't work at the Pentagon. I worked in Bangkok, Thailand, for the government through the Tell Memorial Institute in Columbus, Ohio.
But it wasn't indirectly for the Pentagon, was it?
Well, it was with the Office of the Secretary of Defense, the Advanced Research Projects Agency, ARPA, which is now called, DARPA. And
okay. So you worked for DARPA before it was called DARPA.
Yeah, well, it's just called ARPA, the Advanced Research Projects Agency.
Okay. And what did you do for them?
I was hired as an information specialist. And then I was helping write a counterinsurgency book for the American military. The CETO agreement was in was legal at that time, and if they were attacked, the United States was, let's say we had to go help. There was nothing to give our military on where to go, what to do. And so I was just writing the hydrology and geology of the book, and there were other people that were doing other segments. So if you were a sergeant and you had your troops that you had to get, like across the Mekong River, one of the things I did was I directed the aerial photography. And as we went up, it was in the CIA or Air America helicopters, which were the Sikorsky Helio 19 helicopters. They had been shot at quite a bit, so they decided they would paint them white so that everyone would either know or not know what they were. And it was worse. We got shot at. Yeah. But I would have the pilot. I was in the co-pilot seat, and the pilot would follow my directions on where to go and how to line up the helicopter. So we had the door open. It was just a rope across it. And then we had engineers in the, that were interested in doing that with their Pentax cameras, taking pictures of what we needed to take pictures of. So the sergeants would know where to cross, where the nearest village is, where the potable water was, everything they needed to know to survive and to get their men to do what they needed to do. So this book was written over a several-year period and published in Bangkok it was a very interesting experience. I learned a lot.
You literally had bullets come your way.
Yes.
That's a life that most people will never see. Wow, that's quite fascinating. Where are you from originally, just by the way?
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and I was taken with my parents. They took me to Zanesville, Ohio, and I've been in and out of there, but I've lived in several places, including Bangkok for 4 years, and Thailand and Southeast Asia,
okay.
And in Germany for several years.
Okay. And how long did you work for the government?
4 years in that capacity.
Okay. And did you work in other capacities that you may or may not be able to discuss?
I taught school in Germany for the military, the Department of Defense, and that was
okay.
A fun place to be. It was Kaiserslautern, right near Ramstein Air Force Base.
Okay, all right. And you worked in how did you call it, information intelligence?
I was an information specialist.
Information specialist, okay. So
Dale
you get,
hired me as
you,
an information
Sorry, go ahead. Keep going.
Battelle hired me as an information specialist, and they sent me to England to study with the, it was the World Council of Engineers for, it was like maybe a couple weeks of study on anything you could ever think about knowledge, relationships of knowledge, information problems, objectives, approaches, action plans, mechanization of information handling, let's say connections, collections, indexes, indexing, organization, storage of information, problems, all kinds of procedural steps, abstracting techniques, information retrieval. We were pre-computer. We were putting books into several words with the Remote Area Conflict Information Center out of Columbus so that anyone that was a part of that organization worldwide with RASIC, the Remote Area Conflict Information, they could pull up a data sheet with just a couple words like you do on the Google now or an internet search engine.
So interesting. So in two things, you were creating possible searches, right? So you were inputting information and in a various different subjects, but somewhat related.
Yeah.
And you were working with the internet before anyone had heard about the internet. Is that correct?
We had no internet. We didn't have anything like that. We were doing everything.
Oh, you didn't?
Mentally. By hand.
So no computers. Oh my God. So this was like a manual Google.
Right.
That's amazing. So you have to be pretty darn smart to work in that capacity. So kudos to you. So you have a lot stored in your head then.
Yeah, I do. I had, when I was in college, rather than I minored in chemistry, but I took every other class. So I had a very broad background in every science, which is one of the reasons Patel hired me. But one of the main reasons they hired me, they said, because I took world religions and I would be working with Hindus and Buddhists and many other people, and they wanted someone that understood them. So those were two critical things.
And what years were you working for them?
I was during the Vietnam War in 66 through 70.
Okay. So I just want to make a comment on that. And Lori, are you here yet?
I am. And
okay,
welcome.
Great.
And thank you, Irene, for joining us tonight.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
So in the 1960s, you were working in a high intellectual capacity job during a time where not many women were in the workforce, especially at that capacity. So you were, I can't even call you a pioneer, you know, you were the lone wolf, I would assume. There were probably no women around you.
That's right. We'd fly into an airbase, and they'd hear on the radio, it had the headset set on. Is that a woman? Whoa, look at that. And they couldn't believe it. There was a blonde, blue-eyed female in a helicopter landing. It was kind of fun.
That must have been so much fun.
Yeah.
I assume the guys said there was a propensity for men to sort of take care of you and make sure you were okay. Not that you were helpless, but you were in some dangerous places.
Yes, but I was several thousand feet above the ground. We usually flew between locations at about 1,000 feet, and depending on where we were, then our elevation may have changed.
Okay, all right.
I was off the ground
so
much with that.
Okay, so... gathering all this information, this may be the wrong way to say it, but you were part of Google before there was any notion of Google computers, internet, gathering and aggregating information so that it was actually searchable by people who were part of that that pool that you had, right?
Right, and back then it was called an information specialist, but nowadays if I have information specialist on LinkedIn or something, they think I'm an IT expert. I'm not.
Ah, okay. Well, what I was getting at is that you've written several books. And
correct.
The gathering, and I'm going to use you've stored a lot of information also. So you've gathered it, you've stored it, and you've been able to write about some things that are fiction and nonfiction all wrapped into one, except the reader won't know the difference between fiction and nonfiction. Is that a fair way to express it?
That is correct. They have, it's a like a near future book, but many of the things that are in there that they think are fiction are actually things that are in the process of research or ideas, and anything I use like that, I got permission from the manufacturer or the wherever it was being researched. So, but people that read it, they have no idea whether it's fiction or nonfiction. They won't be able to tell in most cases.
Right, right. So you've written several books, and one book is called Mind Reacher. So do you want to talk about your – how many books have you written, by the way?
Three. The first two were award-winning books, and this one was just published towards the end of 2019. So I haven't
– okay.
I don't know much about fiction awards, so I haven't gotten one of those. Yeah.
Okay.
I
hope
I do.
What were the other books? They were nonfiction. So what were the books about?
The first one was considered the top Christian education book of the year in 2013, when I received 68 NASA astronomy computer programs and used them to find the Christmas star. And that book explains how I did it and what the result was.
So the Christmas star that we've all learned about, like where the three wise men came and Christ was born, and that's the star that you actually, I assume, figured out how to roll back time and find out exactly its exact placement and how it would have been visible to the human eye.
Yeah, I use the NASA computer programs to do that. Astronomy is such a mathematical thing. You could go, like computers now can go 1,000 years in the future or back now. The big computers, the ones when I was using was a little older one, but that's why. Anyway, go ahead. Oh, the second
and,
one.
And you're right. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
The second one I wrote was a biography. I heard the song Mary, Did You Know, which I thought it was beautiful words and everything, but it made her sound as though she was a little ignorant of her life, and that is not true. So I used the sacred texts on the internet, which is a fantastic source of sacred texts that are not used in, like, the Bible, the story of that was written and testified, had a written testimony with Apostle James, which is Joseph's youngest And he lived with Joseph and with Mary, and he was there most of the time. And this is his testimony, which was used in the scriptures in the Christian churches for hundreds of years. And since many people find scripture difficult to read, I put it in the form of a historical narrative. And that book won an award as one of the top three Christian biographies. So it is extremely interesting. There are things in there about Mary that no one had any idea. Like, she was taken to the Jerusalem temple at age 3, and she lived there over a decade. She made a vow to never lie with a man, which is why she never had another child after, or any child after Christ. There's just things in there that are not in the regular Bible. They didn't put any of his information in the Bible because it was not about Jesus. It was about Mary. And the scholars think it was because it was about Mary. It wasn't in the Bible. But the Mind Reader book, that is total fiction, and that is a thriller. It is... Well, let's say the government couldn't find the terrorists who were threatening the United States with nuclear weapons. And I was thinking of a new president, didn't have any in mind, but to remedy that, the new president, with an executive order, formed a very highly classified operation. Now, he was told the only way you're going to find a terrorist is by reading their mind. And he thought, can we do that? And so he formed what is called VESPER, which is the Virtual Extrasensory Perception Experimental Research Project. And I had them put that under the JFK runways, where there were some runways that were starting to be built once upon a time that became too exorbitant, and the airplane companies, became too expensive, and they just stopped. So those runways are there, and they could be enlarged upon. So that's where my corporation is. And it was rumored that in Africa there were some children born under unusual circumstances, which are explained in the book, which is, wow, really exciting. But it was from a doctor who didn't want – learned about the thalidomide children, and he didn't want any of his patients to have any medications. But his patients all had children that were so extremely brilliant. By age 3, they were just outstanding in every field. IQs approaching 200. And it was also rumored that they were telepathic, extremely sensitive telepaths that could use their telepathy over a couple hundred miles.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to stop you right there. I have a question. So, well, maybe I have two. So can you admit or deny that the extrasensory division or entity organization exists in real life somewhere on planet Earth?
Absolutely. The United States Army started experimenting with that back in the 50s. And if you look it up online, you're going to find a lot of it. And many, it's not just our country, but many different countries. They've been doing remote different things.
So this that's based on some nonfiction. It's real reality. And you just added it to the book, which could sound like fiction to people, except this entity really does exist.
Yes.
Okay. So young children, extraordinarily high IQs, approaching 200. To your knowledge, if your IQ does go in that range, has it been found that people start to develop these, what you would call extraordinary or extrasensory capabilities because the IQ or the brain function is so, for lack of better words, sophisticated. There's a better word for that, but it's so keen that people with IQs like that start to be able to sort of move in the direction of having what people, the average person, which let's say 100 IQ, would consider it to be extrasensory, except it's just maybe more typical for people with those kinds of IQ, high IQs. You follow me, or did I make that too complicated?
I do. I follow what you're, where you're seeking, and let me mention one of the reports I read about Isaac Newton estimated his IQ was 275. He was extremely brilliant. And I would assume as your IQ goes up, you are more aware, you have more patience, you have more understanding, and you may not be at all interested in other people or what they're doing.
I
was at a Mensa meeting with a friend, and she said that everyone was rather very isolationist type of thing. They didn't interact very well, and it was very obvious. Extremely brilliant, but involved in their own thoughts or anything anyone said relating to that. But let's say, what's your hobby, Ted?
I pick things up and put things down. It's a joke. It's a joke that Planet Fitness, it's about a gym that I work out. I work out. Planet Fitness made a joke of guys who work out.
That's all right. The more you do that, that information will be stored in a section of your brain, and the more you do that, the more that section of the brain is enlarged more and more and more until finally it becomes a very different from other places in the brain. So like my being a pilot, I have stored a lot of information in one section is about flying. Being an artist, I have another section of my brain, or many sections in the art part, because I do so many different things in the art. So I can relate those things. So everything that you have learned is connected through memories, according to Scientific American Mind magazine, which is one of the best magazines on the market. It used to be print, now it's online only, but it's from Scientific American, and it's Mind, capital M-I-N-D, similar to my title of my book is M-I-N-D-R-E-A-C-H-E-R, Mind Reacher. And it's people that have read the book say they just never learned so much about the mind. They didn't want to stop reading because so much of it is factual, and they know if they looked it up. And in the back, I give references for many of the things. I have a huge glossary in the book. There will be many words people may not have never, they've never heard of this object before. For example, CSIRO, in C-S-I-R-O, is a company, the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization in Australia. And they have a branch now in the Silicon Valley in California, I think. But it's in Canberra, and they developed a water filter that I use in Mind Reacher as a very common thing. Mind Reacher is what would they call a very close future, near future. But this is a small, they can make it as big as they want, but there is no one manufacturing it yet. Whoever manufactures it will earn so much they could own the world. But this is a water filter made out of graphene, which one molecule, I think it's the strongest object. You could balance a Boeing 727 on it probably. But it has what are called nano channels, lets water through, otherwise it repels water. But in Australia, they would put sewer water through it, one pass, that water comes out 99.9% pure. And you can, the ones they illustrate in their pick, 2 inches, you could put that over a bottle, over a glass, or in front of your mouth when you pour water into it. The water is pure. Pick sewer water, ocean water, anything. And they can make them big enough for a city. But in my book, it's just commonplace that my hero and my heroine use it when they are in the middle of nowhere in Laos or wherever they happen to be. And that's how they clean their water. So
they're able,
like that,
with that tool, with that tool, they can travel anywhere, and it doesn't matter if the water's clean. As long as they have access to any kind of water, they'll clean it and be able to drink
it. That's right.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
And then in the front of the book is a list of abbreviations. It's a lot of military terms. Military will absolutely love this book. Scientists will love this book. Neurologists will go crazy with all the mind things that are in it. And then the terrorists, of course, are going to be very worried because if someone can read their minds, the heroine, who can, is a telepath, can read minds, and she's on every terrorist hit list. So that's HIV.
Interesting.
List.
So, so let me, one second. So if anyone would like to call in and ask Irene questions, you can call in at area code 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. So, Irene, some of this technology, as you were just saying, or organizations, they do exist. How do you think some of this technology, which is in the near future, will affect business in the U.S. and globally?
Whoever produces this filter, every single person in the world will want one. Every single person
okay.
will want to be able to have clean water, and that will allow clean water throughout the world. Of course, the people that want depopulation will have a problem because people with clean water, they're not going to be getting the diseases like they normally would.
Okay.
But and
so
if,
that
if people,
could
have,
alter. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You have.
It will have that one company that manufactures it. No one stepped up yet. Most people that are billionaires, they want to buy companies that are already making money. They're not interested in creating a manufacturing process. But that will change the world, and the country whose factories are producing the filters will be the leading countries of the world financially, probably, because you think every single person in the world is going to buy at least one and many more, perhaps, through their lifetime. So that'll be
there are people who – Well, there are people that die from, you know, water that's not so clean. So that would increase the population and
absolutely
lifespan of a lot of people.
Yes, yes. But I have many blogs on my website. If anyone just goes to Irene Baron, and the Baroness only has one R, B-A-R-O-N, just put irenebaron.com and it should take you right to my website. And there's a blog index, and there's a lot of things on there, not as many as I probably should have put on there. And it'll have links to my books, or the books are available at Amazon. But
okay.
Right. I think that's probably one of the biggest impacts on Earth would be someone producing that filter. And it was made
okay.
by Australia, a government organization.
Oh, interesting. How long ago was it made?
Just a couple years. It's not been that long.
So it's fairly new. Okay, fairly new technology. And what about, so you say there are organizations that are researching mental telepathy, so they are investing money in it.
Military is all the ones I know, and some other countries. Or I don't know if they're government or what, but in the United States, as far back as I could go, the 50s, there were people that entertained on radio or television or something that people weren't sure if they were tricks or what, bending forks or whatever. But in the United States, the furthest east, and that was started with the United States Army, but and they're thinking, how could, and the hero of this book, who was a Marine, United States Marine Corps, he was assigned to be the telepath's bodyguard. He was a very elite hero. And he was also to observe how could any of these techniques be used in combat. And so that's another section of the book. He's thinking...
That's frightening.
Excuse me?
I said that's kind of frightening, right, to be able to use telepathy in combat, such a powerful tool, and it's
well,
like mind control.
In medieval Germany, in all the troops, there was usually a blonde maiden that knew where the troops were, where they would come from, and people that were aware, maybe not with telepathy, but they had some extrasensory perception that they told their troops where to stock their weapons and everything. So it's not something new. It's just more developed in my book. I did a lot of research on it. It's very interesting. But eventually, if you trained your troops to do that, they wouldn't need satellites to know where the enemy was.
Yes, that's true as well. They could scry for it, like, right? So, where are they? And, you know, you get an answer. I guess I always like to ask about how people publish their books, if they're self-published, if you had an agency. You know, we're all about entrepreneurial spirit. There's so many of our listeners that want to write a book and are just, you know, they don't know where to start or the resources or, you know, any of that. And you're so accomplished. You know, it's just, it's such an honor to have you here. Would you mind talking about that process for a little bit or helping our readers kind of understand?
I would be pleased to do so. When I wanted to publish Unraveling the Christmas Star Mystery, and it's very difficult to publish something that's unusual. I wasn't thinking of it as a Christian book, but it ended up being one. I was thinking of it as an archaeoastronomy book, ancient astronomy. But I went through several different sections on the internet, on places where you, as an independent author, an indie author, could publish a book. And after going through 4, 5, or 6 of them and getting comments from other people and recommendations online, I decided to go with Amazon. At that time, it was called Create Space. Now it's called Kindle. Mm-hmm. They have the Kindle section. Mm-hmm. And Amazon has developed their process so that it is so easy and it's free. A person, once they have written their book and they have edited it many times and had a professional editor edit it there 1 or 2 or 3 times, then they could consider self-publishing at no cost to themselves. And they think, well, what do I do? What do I do? Well, Amazon explains every step. What do you do now? What do you do now? And before you go on to the next one, or you can, on some of those, you can flip back and forth. But you have to have the cover. You have to have, sometimes, like I have an artist I found for the Mind Reacher cover in Colombia, in South America, had some really unique art on the internet. So he did my cover, and then I had a gentleman in Ohio use that artwork to create the verbiage. The title, my name, and the information on the back, et cetera. So that would be posted on Amazon. Then you posted the text. And if there's anything wrong with the text, they let you know so that you could go back and correct it and then resubmit it.
Right.
But anything you needed, it was right there in front of you. This is why you've got teenagers publishing books. They can do it too. And they have people who can help you. You can either chat, email, and I've talked to them on the telephone. I think Amazon for an indie author is very, very easy to use. And I would highly recommend
it. You make it sound very easy.
It is. But you have to dedicate some time to reading what they say, and you choose the size of your book, and they... You can go online and say how big are most thriller books. Mine is a thriller. And the size of the everything. How many words do they have? How wide are the margins? Where do the page numbers go? And a lot of that you will find many different places. There's authors all over the place. They've written books and they've put their experiences in books. You can buy them online. Many at Amazon. Barnes & Noble, thrift books, which sell a lot of used books. It's not a difficult process. And since it's free, anyone can do it. So you just go to KDP, the Kindle, or just go to Amazon. How do I publish a book? And it's going to be all over the place. And you can do it.
Oh, interesting.
That's awesome.
And it's free. Wow.
Yeah. So you see, you have your cover. Do you want it glossy? Do you want it flat? Is it black and white? Is it color? You know, there's just so many little questions, but they're easy to answer, and they make it so easy to make the decisions. And then what's great about Amazon, sometimes they have what are called auto-correct, but don't correct it the way it's supposed to be. You'll be going out of something. So what was that? Something changed just as it was leaving the screen. And I found that in the book there were a couple of things that were auto-correct that were not correct. So one thing about Amazon, if there's something wrong, you can go back and change it, change your original and resubmit it. So you end up, anytime that book is for sale, you can go in and change it. You can't change the ISBN number or the library number. And if you want it listed in the Library of Congress, you must apply for that Library of Congress number before the book is published. Otherwise, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Do you have to pay through for that? Do you pay for that?
No.
The ISBN number through Amazon? Or does it automatically apply through Amazon?
You don't do that through, you don't do it through Amazon. You actually contact the Library of Congress.
Okay. And I assume you can go online to do that with the Library of Congress.
Yes.
What, do you fill out a form, like this is the title of my book and that's it?
Yes, and then you have to either send them a disc with it on or a copy of the actual book. And you don't apply for the Library of Congress number. After the book is published, then they want it sent to them so that they'll have either on the disc or the physical book.
So
I
on
would
the
send the
disc, okay, on the disc, does it have to be, can it be in a Word document or the normal book, the format for the book?
It's usually Word because when you're correcting everything on your computer, it's Word. So it would be a Word document.
Okay.
It would include everything from the board, you know, the cover, both the cover, the spine, and it would have everything that you would need to give to Amazon to print a book. But you're just putting it on a disk instead. It's so much easier for me just to put it on a physical book. I'd rather in the Library of Congress. If it's something physical, people can see it and look at it. Whether it's on a disc, you know, it's kind of hidden. Next question.
Yes. So what made you want to write a book?
Yeah. Well, I never did that much. I did a lot of drawing as a youth. excuse me. But when I was in high school, my English teacher would read. We had so many essays we had to write. And my English teacher was very stern and very thorough, a very good teacher. She read my essays to other classes. She never read them to the class I was in, but I would hear about it. And I thought, wow, you read them to other classes? They must be pretty good. So I kept trying to improve to get more read to other classes and started. But I was a voracious reader as a youth. Oh, when I learned about the public library, I was just ecstatic. Wow! We had encyclopedias at home. We didn't have that many books. I would just sit and read the encyclopedias.
So that was your hobby growing up. You loved reading encyclopedias.
I read anything. And when I discovered the public library, I think my favorite books were about flying saucers. I read everything they had about UFOs. Those were so fun.
No kidding.
A little girl, I'd see shooting stars, and I thought they were spaceships going from star to star. I had no idea what they were.
We still might find out they might be.
Yes, I founded an astronomy club here in Zanesville. We have about 300 members now. And it's so much fun. I had one 13-year-old boy. We were looking at Mars and Jupiter and different things on a 17.5-inch telescope in an observatory that was donated to the university. And he shouted out, "This is the most exciting night of my life!" And I thought, 13 years old, wow, that was so neat. I loved it.
Right,
it was
really
great.
Cool. Yeah. That's very cool.
And having an astronomy background, yeah, I studied astronomy in college with a professor, Clark, who was considered the 13th top mathematician in the world. And his astronomy classes were just phenomenal. And that's why I had such a great background. Once I had those computers, excuse me, from NASA, I could go right into them and understand all the different things that were happening in the sky.
Amazing.
Out of curiosity, did you take any neuroscience classes? Did they exist when you were in college?
Did not. I took, since I was a science major, there's a lot of classes I wasn't allowed to take. If you're a science major, you weren't allowed to take basic classes. Like, I wanted to take botany to learn all about plants, and they said you can't take botany. You have to have morphology. I didn't even know what that was at the time. So, if you're a science major, you can't take the basic ones. You have to take the major classes.
Do you remember if neuroscience was? Do you not remember if neuroscience was a part of any curriculum?
If I were in a medical school, probably it would be offered, but I don't believe it was offered at Hiram, or I would have probably taken it.
Interesting. Well, when you talk about your book and saying that a neuroscientist would be completely fascinated by it, I just wondered if you had taken any. That's the way it sounds. So that's my other, aside from working out, that's my other hobby is neuroscience.
Well, you would love this book too, then. And there's things that happen in here that refer to the brain that people will think are fiction, but actually things have happened in other people's lives that I know about, people that I know, especially as pilots or something like that. And you would say, wow, yeah, that's interesting. And you'd think it's fiction, but it isn't. Very interesting.
Interesting. So you kind of would like to leave your readers to their own imagination to know what's fiction and what's reality. You kind of don't tell. You let the lines stay blurred so people can just enjoy the fiction, correct?
Absolutely. There was one of my reviewers said she was swept off. She said, I was swept off my feet by a complex scenario. What startled me about the story was just how different a path it took. She said it's loaded with psychological and scientific intricacies that really make you wonder. It's a bit like Jurassic Park, but instead of dinosaurs, it's psychics. And the science of STEM and the ethical complications are thought-provoking. This book will change everything you think you know about psychics. So she said, of course, it's good for science fiction or anyone interested. But each book, this is just the first in the series. And this book took place in, of course, they're all going to start in the United States, but this went to South Africa and Thailand and then to Laos. The second book is taking place mainly in Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands. So each book will take place in a different country. So they're called a geopolitical series also.
Are you talking any movie deals?
Oh, don't I wish. That would be great.
Sounds
like
it. I think it was in the 90s where a lot of the spies were unemployed, right? Because, the Cold War was over. And I was reading once that instead of the spies being used for other governments or militaries, corporations started hiring them so that they could spy on their competitors, let's get the formula for Coca-Cola or anything else. So in your book, instead of looking for terrorists, is that any part of the book where people are looking to spy on their competition to find out what they're doing or their strategy and how to one-up them?
No, not at all. The main thing in the book is to find more telepaths, to find terrorists. And the goal would be have a extremely, like a mind reader, one of the top telepaths, have them fly over a city like New York and isolate where the terrorists are. Now, the problem is, and it's mentioned in the book, how could you prove what a telepath said? How would you go about changing the laws or making new laws to protect them and to protect everybody else, too? It becomes a very interesting concept. People are afraid of something they don't know. If they don't understand something, especially, they don't want it, they don't like it. So the people in the book can be very frightening to someone that is totally ignorant of the concept. So in this book, when you mentioned the movies, this is like an Indiana Jones style, a very friendly beginning with the characters are dueling. When this Marine, this Major John Coulter, was assigned to be a protector or bodyguard for the heroine, he didn't like psychics. He never wanted anything to do with them, and he told the people that were assigning him this job he didn't want that, but that they assigned him that because they needed information for the military. And so the characters are dueling a little bit, and the venue, there's very suspenseful changes in the venue. They have to go where their clues lead them. Very exotic scene. There is no sex in it and almost nothing in profanity. The action's epic.
Okay. Interesting.
The climax is chart busting. So there are many people. I liked to read Lewis L'Amour when I was growing up, and he has sold more books around the world than any other author in history. And he never had sex or profanity or things like that. And if he sold more books than any other author in the world, then, you know, you don't really have to have that to sell a book. So there's, in the first book, there's a little bit of friendliness beginning more and more. Once they get over this antagonistic, she knows he doesn't like psychics. She's a psychic. And there's some other little problems that they have along the way. So you have some dueling there. And I think it would be very easy to be in a movie. People would love it. I think it would be fun. Everyone that's reading it says, man, this should be a movie.
So let me ask you, so with your background, not just as an author, but pre-computers, and if you look at where we fast forward from the 60s until today, where AI is becoming more and more part of our world, right? 5G, AI. So in some ways, is MindReacher being offered to us through technology, through AI, do you think? Are there parallels?
I'm not quite sure how to answer the question. I mean, with the artificial intelligence. The artificial intelligence in this is very little. The only thing that they're using that would be more IT is the hero and the heroine have embedded in them transceivers right behind their ear. The skin is transparent, or let's say translucent, so it gets its power from sunlight. But it's a transceiver, so that everyone back at the headquarters, at the computer room, they are taping everything that's said by them, and they know exactly where they are, and they have big computers. I was at the AT&T Research Labs once as well. A technology teacher of the year for Ohio in the 90s one time. And it was an award to go up to the AT&T Research Labs. And I kind of was thinking what that computer room would look like. They had a huge wall that had these screens. It wasn't a screen, it was more of a projection on the walls, you know, about 4 by 5 feet or something. It's humongous. And so I use a lot of experiences that I've had to try to explain what these places are like. And have you read about the underground places for our political people in case we're attacked? Safe places.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
in the mountains.
In my book,
right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes. Like Greenbrier used to be, but when it's found out, then they don't use them anymore. But in my book, I use Under the Runways. They're still enlarging to make that one of the top ones. So there's a lot of interplay there with with future technology in that capacity. And they only use, of course, in my book, they only use the biggest and the best computers. And they keep changing, so I have to keep changing my book as they evolve. But what's interesting... And you've been reading about Australia was super hacked. Their infrastructure was hacked, and they believe it was from China. Where China and East Europe and, you know, all over the world, these people, they just have thousands of them trying to get in to get data. Here in the United States, we have such creative people, and other countries, they come in, they want to grab our information and take it and then manufacture using our data. They did that with Australia, and they keep pushing, we call them pings, they keep pushing, trying to get that data. They need to get into this factory, and they'll have a couple hundred people working, trying to get into this factory to get all the data, and the factory may not even realize it, but that's happening all the time right now, and this is something that the government is already addressing it. Most people have no idea. Unless they're searching this like I do, they don't realize what's happening. But if they do the superstructure.
Go ahead.
One of my blogs, I address that. Several of my blogs, I address what are the laws here in the United States if our superstructure were attacked, that everything, the electricity, the water, everything on a computer for companies, et cetera, there are laws already set what will happen. And you can read my blog about what are the laws. And I just look them up and find them, and some of them are classified.
I want to take that, what you're saying. So it's really related to what I was asking about AI, right? So, you know, Google has become so sophisticated with their algorithms and searches that they are individual, right? So they can... Facebook, they can anticipate what you are going to look for or what you want, right? So the searches have become that sophisticated. It's not necessarily reading your mind, but they are mapping out patterns and being able to predict behavior based on your patterns that you exhibit, right?
Yes, I don't use a traceable one. I use one like DuckDuckGo, which as soon as you're done, it's gone. The information's gone. Nobody can see where you were.
Well, people would want to know about that. What I'm getting at is that AI, so human beings are writing algorithms that can map out patterns. AI may be able to map out patterns that can predict future behavior, which is almost like mind reading. It's not quite, but you see what I'm getting at? That's what I'm getting about the parallels in your book. Will we be looking at a day where instead of having a human mind reader, we will have AI that is not necessarily reading your mind, but they've mapped out such big data on individuals, families, nations, that it could actually predict, almost like a mind reader, your next move and be able to find, let's say if you're searching for terrorists, right? They'd be able to map out terrorist behavior and the things they do and the patterns and map out where they may be and be able to find them. So is that kind of in the same ballpark as your book?
Not in this book. The computer is used in this book, not in that capacity. But like with Facebook, they had two computers, I'm not sure exactly when, I think it's been in the last year, that started talking. Two like robot things that started communicating.
Oh, I read about that. Yeah, yeah. In their own language.
They shut them off right away.
Yeah,
and I thought, what language they spoke. What did they say?
Right. Well, they started creating their own language that seemed like gibberish to a human being, except they were using patterns in our language they became more efficient to get their point across to one another. Mm-hmm. But it became gibberish to us. And yes, they should.
In the mind research in the Mind Reader book, these children that were born in South Africa, about 20 of them, that use telepathy, use what is called communal telepathy, which means that they, when one sent out a thought, all the other babies or children as they grew had that same thought. Instantly, they communicated with one another. Their thoughts between the 20 were instant. So it took so long for them to get information from a parent. Parents weren't needed. So these parents had children. They said, oh, boy, we're just going to love them, and you know, they're going to love us, et cetera. But they didn't. They didn't have time. You know, if babies wanted information, they just couldn't get from people's minds. And the parents were extremely upset and scared because these children were brilliant. And so they wanted to escape that. So, and then in the book you'll see how that happens. So they separate these kids.
So if people want to get a hold of your books, especially Mind Reacher, how can they do that?
They could go to Amazon and put the book, they put Mind Reacher, Irene Barron, and it should come right up. Or they can go to my website, and there's links. Just go to irenebarron.com. And you just put my name in. You don't even need the .com. Most of the time I'm right at the top of all the search engines.
Okay. And if anyone would like to speak to you personally, can they, or is there an email, or should they just go through your blog or some other way?
No, I do have an email, and there are places online where you can connect, but three or four different emails depending on what I'm using them for. But I have one business one, which they can easily find from online once they sign up online. But
okay.
If you just go to Irene Barron at irenebarron.com, that's my professional one.
That's the easiest one.
I'm also
Do you still do any work in astronomy at all?
Would you repeat that?
Oh, do you still do any work in astronomy?
Yes. Most of my blogs happen to be astronomy. they're categorized. And the astronomy ones, yes. There is an app. Excuse me. I had a cough here. There's an app called APOD, the Astronomy Picture of the Day, which they take all the astronomy pictures around the world and they'll choose the best one of the day and publish it. And the thing I do in the morning is look at the APOD picture and read the paragraph about it. And people that are homeschooling, that they need to teach astronomy and they have no idea where you're going to get pictures, that if you use, instead of the app, go to the computer and do APOD, the astronomy, you just need APOD, it will bring it up, the astronomy picture of the day. If you go on to see their picture, if you go down to the bottom of the page, they have pictures of, they have a search engine, they have an index. You want to have a picture of Jupiter, you put Jupiter in and there will be hundreds of pictures. And they have an archive that goes back 10 or more years of everything they've published, and their videos are fantastic. It is just a wonderful site for astronomy. And I tell everyone in my astronomy club to have apps on their smartphones. And I said, when you're finished with your phone, don't throw it away. Don't give it to your child that doesn't have a phone on it, but that's all right. They've got a small computer they can put in their pocket. Put an app on that, night sky. And when that app is up at night, let the kids teach you. Hold it up in the air, and as you move that phone around, everything in the sky is right behind it, and not only is it behind it, but it tells you what it is, whether it's a star or planet or, depending on your settings, satellites or whatever. You can find the International Space Station. So astronomy is something
perfect.
That can be very easy.
Lori, did you want to say? I know we're like clamping down on a closing seconds here.
I just wanted to thank Irene, and it was absolutely fascinating. You know, your story is amazing. You're amazing. Definitely topics I'm interested in. And, you know, we just appreciate so much having you as a guest.
Well, thank you. And the Mind Reacher isn't all thriller. There's humor in it, too. People will appreciate that. At the very tense moments, there'll be something. But I've traveled a lot. A lot of the mind reading takes place in Southeast Asia, where I lived and traveled. And it was a lot of the experiences I gained working for the government. It was all top secret. Some things have been classified, but I know the ins and outs. And one of the best things that happened over there was the library at ARPA. They were cleaning out a lot of things, especially counterinsurgency manuals and books. And they said, if you want them, buy them, or we're just going to throw them out. And I just grabbed armfuls. That's where I got a lot of my data. I just couldn't believe. I read those and I thought, whoa, everyone would love to know this. You know, survival and just all conditions, desert, jungle, just anything. And that's where I got my information. I thought, I've got to write a book about this. And that's where I really started on mind reading, was way back then. And I just started collecting data. I have a four-drawer file cabinet filled with data for the Mind Reacher series.
Interesting. So, no question. Intriguing and very interesting, exciting conversation with you, Irene. Thank you for being a guest. We are actually out of time. No, our pleasure. And I thank everyone who listened, and I'm sure everyone was intrigued by it. Mind Reacher is the book. I look forward to reading it also, especially as a person with deep interest in neuroscience. So I look forward to it. Thank you, Irene.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Have a good
evening,
everyone. Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.